Hey gang, episode 335 of the Commander's Brew. This week is a Satoru Umezawa ninjutsu deck. We're going to talk about the different ways you can brew that, kind of finding your own style, if you will. In the pre-show banter chat, I want to give you my hot take on children's first words. It's a hot one. Stay tuned for that. Before we do, though, I definitely want to do the business, right? I want to thank you for listening. Really do appreciate it. Thank you for giving me your ears, friends, Romans, countrymen, lending me those ears for these brief 48 approximate minutes, something like that. I actually don't know, but I appreciate it. Thank you for doing so. Maybe you go over to patreon.com/commandersbrew to help out that way financially. That is an enormous way to help. Much appreciated that way. You can use our TCG player link, give us nice reviews on your podcast apps, help us get more ears. That's kind of the name of the game, and we really do appreciate it. But if you're a Canadian listener, we do have the best deal for you, money off your magic singles at the Wizard Tower. Let's hear an ad from them now. We're proud Canadian podcasters, and we're proud to be sponsored by one of Canada's premier card stores, the Wizard's Tower, wizardtower.com. Our Canadian listeners get an exclusive coupon code BREWNEO to get 5% off any order of singles shipped to you for free as long as you've ordered $20 or more in singles. And you can check out our decklist for this week's episode and other episodes we've done on their content site, mtgcanada.com. Remember raves? Look at the size of these pants! Okay, you may or may not know, I have a little baby girl. She is now 7 months old, and, you know, the concept of the first word is an interesting one. I've been asking some of my pals what their children's first words are, and really, you have to ask the question, do you count the first word as in the first sounds that a baby makes that our adult ears hear as a word, or are you counting this as the first, like, oh, I've learned what this is, spoon, for example? I don't think there's a baby out there who has the first word spoon, but for example, if they learned what a spoon was and was able to make the sound spoon and point to it, then we would know, like, oh, this baby has learned that word for the proper use. That's their first word. Tons of babies have like dada, mama, things like that as a first word. But that's, see, I would argue that that is just sounds that they're making that we have attributed to words. I don't think a baby knows when they go dada for the very first time that they're talking about their father. They've identified this human being and that's the specific name or title for them. I don't think that's what's going on. They're just babbling sounds. I think that's a safe assumption. Now, here's the hot take. Once you take that assumption that whatever the first sound that you hear as a word is, it's all out the window. The data is corrupted as heck, if you will. Because if you're just going to say whatever sound sounds like a word, there should be way more babies with the first word, because like they make that sound before they make anything else. And like, just random sound effects that kind of sound like words. I know our child, like, she's going through, like, a sound a day, basically. Like, one day it's like, oh, this is the sound today. And she's just making that sound as much as she can all day. And, you know, that'll pass, and then another day goes by and a new sound. Maybe it's a th-th-th-th-th-th, just kind of like, playing around with her tongue position and what that feels like, what that sounds like. I assume she's super intelligent. Why wouldn't I? But then the interesting thing is to think about if babies are making sounds like th and th and b and m, like there's, if you combine those somewhere, there has to be a baby out there whose first word that the parents actually heard was death. But I don't know that there's a baby out there with whose first word was death, but I believe the entire baby's first word industry, the industry of it, all the plaques that are sold, all the Instagram posts, all the everything about it, I think it's I think it's manufactured. I don't think those are anyone's baby's first words. If on record, my child's first word is dada, and I feel very proud. And I'm waiting for the day when she's able to identify something and point to it and say, this is what it is. Maybe something like cyclonic rift. Maybe, or maybe not. Anyway, that's my hot take on baby's first words. What do you say we get to this ninjutsu deck? Obviously, we're going to do ninjutsu, but I think this is a very interesting brew. I think the way this played out was very interesting, and if you'll indulge me, we can go on a little tour of the deck tale. Okay, so Satoru Umezawa, it's a 3-mana commander. It's already pretty good. 3-mana is not that expensive. We can cast him again if he gets dealt with. 1 blue-black, Dimir, Human Ninja, 2/4. There's 2 abilities. I'm going to start from the bottom, which is the most important one. Each creature in your hand has ninjutsu for 2 blue-black. 4 mana for ninjutsu. There's more. Card advantage. Whenever you activate a ninjutsu ability, you only get this once per turn, but you get to look at the top 3 cards of your library. One goes in your hand, and the rest go on the bottom in any order. In any order. That card advantage, I don't think is necessary, but it seems very powerful as it is. Satoru is a great commander, and let me talk about ninjutsu for a second. So ninjutsu is interesting in that it gives all the cards in your hand ninjutsu. So we actually don't end up running a lot of cards that say ninjutsu natively on them, but all ninjutsu decks want little creatures to become unblocked, because if you're not blocked, that's when you get to do ninjutsu after the declare blockers step. They've declared some creatures not blocked. Well, now I get to ninjutsu. I get to trade them out for 4 mana. So the blueprint is tons of little tiny unblockable creatures, and we'll trade them in for 4 mana for creatures that cost way more than 4 and just get extra value that way. Some of our little dudes that we're going to get in and sneak in, there's tons of these. Triton, Shore Stalker, 1/1 for a blue, can't be blocked. Tormented Soul, 1/1 for a black, can't be blocked and can't block. Even something like Spectral Sailor, I think, has a home in the deck. It's a single blue for a flying 1/1. You can also draw cards for 4 mana if you want to, but it's got flash and flying, so it's evasive. You can probably get into ninjutsu it. And the flash means you can surprise an opponent. Maybe your board doesn't have any unblockables and your opponents are feeling safe because they can block you on the ground, but here comes a flying attacker that I can ninjutsu something disgusting in on my turn. I like this addition. Tons of little one drops. I'm not going to go over all of them, but there's no shortage of them. And the beauty is after they're in our hand, we can recast them for a single mana. That's the goal here, a single mana. So then there's a couple more kind of staples that the deck really wants. I can't imagine brewing a Satoru deck without these. Grazalax, Illithid Scholar from Adventures of the Forgotten Realms. This is the 3/2 for 3, 1 blue-blue, Legendary Horror. Whenever a creature you control becomes blocked, you may return it to its owner's hand. This is perfect for a ninjutsu deck, because if you're about to lose a creature because it gets blocked, you can just return it to your hand, no problem. This is not so relevant for all our little unblockable creatures, but once we start ninjutsuing things, we're going to want to get things through, and maybe we don't want them to trade, that sort of thing. Well, Spectral Sailor is a great example. That thing can be blocked. And in addition, whenever one or more creatures you control deals combat damage to a player, you draw a card. That's great. That's even more card advantage. This is shaping up to be quite the deck. There's an enchantment called Cunning Evasion. It's 1 and a blue. It does the same thing as Grazalax's first ability. When our creatures become blocked, we may return it to its owner's hand. That's from Modern Horizons. Awesome. Like, those definitely belong. And then I did say that there's not a lot of actual ninjutsu cards in the deck, but I'm for sure running Silver for a master, blue-black for the 2/2 rat ninja. It does have ninjutsu for blue-black. But the key here is other ninjutsu abilities you activate cost 1 less to activate. That means our commander has now a 3-mana activation to do his thing. 3 mana is less than 4. I know that's just math. I know that's just counting. I know, I'm sure you're aware of this, but you can ninjutsu 2 things in a turn. You can also ninjutsu something in and then ninjutsu that in because it's still not blocked if you wanted to, if you wanted to get the ETB ability. Oh, and we have some ETB abilities. Trust me on that one. First half of the deck's covered. Some staples and the little creatures that we're going to kind of fuel the ninjas with, the catalysts. What about the big boys? It wouldn't be hard to just go down like the top 10 list of like six drops or greater in the Dimir colors, put in some ramp, put in some removal, put in some draw, boom, you got a deck. I mean, I don't have to tell you, like, you could obviously do something like Consecrated Sphinx, Void Winnower, Blightsteel Colossus, the original Jyn Gataxias, which I think you could make a weird argument for because Jyn Gataxias showed up on Kamigawa again. So it's kind of a flavor win, but it's the one of the saltiest cards that there are. Just in case you have not had the pleasure of running into it across the battlefield, it's a flash 5/4. And at the beginning of your end step, you draw seven cards. And at the beginning of everyone else's maximum hand size is reduced by seven. In other words, zero. So it's a pretty mean card. Again, I'm not going to dwell on this. These are obvious. This is the obvious way to brew the deck, but we want to do something differently. I'm always looking for more interesting ways to go with that. Before I do, though, I want to take a moment and talk about protection. This is a deck that relies on protecting the commander. And of course, that makes us think of the Lightning Greaves, the Swiftfoot Boots, equipment that gives our commander Hexproof or Shroud. I'm a big fan of something like Diplomatic Immunity. It's an aura for one and a blue. It enchants a creature. The creature has Shroud, and the enchantment itself has Shroud, and the enchanted creature has Shroud. So nothing can touch this except for a board wipe. So, yeah. In general, though, I'm not a huge fan of any kind of effect that just permanently shuts down interaction. I much prefer my protection to come in the form of like a dive down. It's a one and a blue for an instant and gives a creature +0/+3 in hexproof. You see a guard approach from Forgotten Realms. You can choose the hexproof version, or you can tap a creature with Distract the Guard. All for a single blue. I really prefer these kind of like interactive ways to do it. You can hold up the blue. If you don't need it, flash in your Spectral Sailor, whatever. But if you do, it's a great way to protect your commander. And it eats up the removal spell, which I kind of like. If you're just shrouded up, they just can't use that removal spell. I mean, maybe you'd rather you have them use that on another creature. But I like kind of out-tempoing them that way. And there's also something about when you're wearing Swiftfoot Boots, the table knows you're up to something, and the table knows that is a top priority target, and they will pool their resources to try to remove it, to try to remove the creature and the boots, etc. I think it paints too much of a target, but if you're just holding an instant, they don't know what's up, and maybe they won't kind of look at you as such a high priority target. I don't know. Once they play the deck, they probably should, but in any case, I've said my 2 cents on the issue, and that's all I'll say. I do also want to highlight Malakir Rebirth. I think it's up to $2 if you don't have one already. I think it's a must run in any deck with black in it. That runs creatures, that is. It's a single black instant on the front, but it's also a land on the back if you need it to be. But target creature, you lose 2 life, and when the creature dies, you bring it back to the battlefield under its owner's control, tapped. Again, between the Hexproof and the Malakir Rebirth, that sort of thing, we've got a lot of ways to protect our commander. And that's why I love the game, EDH, because some work against Wraths, some work against targeted exile spells, but some don't work against specific things. There's a lot of dynamic interaction. That's what I love in a game. And, you know, if that's too much for you, if you'd rather just run a suite of counter spells instead, more power to you. I want to highlight Familiar's Ruse. It's blue-blue for an instant to counter target spell, which is the same as Counterspell, but this one has a quote-unquote drawback. As an additional cost, you have to return a creature you control to its owner's hand. Presumably there's enough ETB creatures that this is a good thing for us. We get to recast them, and if we have to, we can return numerous one-drops and just recast them for one. So, you know, it eventually becomes the same price as a cancel, which is strictly worse than a Counterspell, but just something to think about. Ooh, and I also want to highlight the brand new one from the commander deck of this set, Access Denied. It's 3 blue-blue for an instant. you counter target spell and create X11 colorless Thopter artifact creature tokens with flying, where X is that spell's mana value. This is the same as the pirate one that you counter a spell and get treasures, spell swindle, except instead of treasures, you get Thopters. I'm not going to try to convince you that Thopters are better than treasure as a whole, but I love the idea of getting a bunch of 1-1 flyers. They're probably evasive. I mean, they're definitely evasive, but they'll probably be able to get through. We'll probably be able to use them to ninjutsu some things, and I don't mind that I have to return them to my hand and they disappear that way. But even if I did swing in with a Thopter and I wanted to, I want to point out a little specific interaction about ninjutsu. It's that elusive end of combat step. It's the last one after damage. We're allowed to do the damage with the creature and then ninjutsu something. This is key for an ETB ability where, you know, maybe the creature you're jumping in has the same amount of power, so it doesn't make a difference. Maybe we've got Grazlax and we do want to connect first. I mean, Grazlax would work either way. I'll get to it in a second, but follow me here. You can do the damage before returning it to your hand, and that's important. Of course, we're going to run cards like Bident of Thassa to be able to draw cards whenever we do combat damage. Reconnaissance Mission is similar. They're both 4-mana enchantments that whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. Reconnaissance Mission has cycling. Bident of Thassa also has an ability to make your creatures, your opponent's creatures attack this turn if able, which is pretty nice in a deck that wants to get through on combat. They tend to not have too many blockers left over once you're able to activate this. And so there's a ninja that has a combat damage ability called Fallen Shinobi. It's one of the more expensive cards in the deck. This is a $6 card. It's got ninjutsu for 4, same as Satoru's activated ability. So, I mean, our commander can just make this happen. But it's a 5-4 for 5 if you want to cast it the hard way. And whenever Fallen Shinobi deals combat damage to a player, that player exiles the top 2 cards of their library, and until end of turn, you may play those cards without paying their mana cost. We get to play them. So it doesn't say cast, which means we're allowed to do lands. So I can get a land drop this way. I can maybe cast the other card as well. 2. You get 2 until the end of turn. That's pretty good. Now I bring this up because here's the first point where we're like, okay, maybe this is what we're doing with this sort of thing. What if our ninjutsu package was all about combat damage and all about taking stuff from our opponent's deck? Kind of like a ninja mind games kind of thing like that. That sounds fun to me. So of course, now we got to get Thief of Sanity in here. 1 blue-black, Flying Spectre 2/2. Again, we can ninjutsu it for 4. We're losing out on mana if we ninjutsu this, but we get the surprise. I think that one additional mana is well worth our opponents not realizing they're going to be hit with a Thief of Sanity. Because when we do combat damage, we look at the top 3 cards of their library, exile 1 face down, and we can cast that card anytime we want, using mana of any color. It's ours. It's in a virtual hand of ours, and it's face down, so they don't know what it is unless they can tutor something and they look through their library and just do the math by what's missing. Similarly, Nashi Moonsage's Scion is a new rat ninja from Legends or from Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. Again, it's a 3-mana creature with a 4-mana ninjutsu, so we're paying a premium by ninjutsuing this in. However, you get a 3/2 that says whenever Nashi deals combat damage to a player, exile the top card of everybody's library, including our own. And until end of turn, we get to play one of those cards. And if we cast a spell that way, instead of paying mana, we pay life. Ooh, pretty good. Gonti, Lord of Luxury, 2 black-black, Aetherborn Rogue, 2/3 with Death Touch. Same deal. You get to look at the top 4 cards of target opponent's library and exile 1 face down. You can cast it anytime you want using any color for any kind of mana. This is not a combat damage trigger. This is an ETB trigger, but it also works great with ninjutsu. If I ninjutsu in Gonti, I get to do this. There's another card in my arsenal from my opponent's deck, and Gonti's got Death Touch. So are you going to block Gonti? You kind of have to, but if you're going to offer the trade, then sure, I win that one. And if you let him through, I can ninjutsu something else. Not to mention, if we've got Grazalax or Cunning Evasion still, we can just, if you block Gonti, cool, back into my hand. If you don't, I'll ninjutsu something else. Love it. I also want to highlight Rogue Class. This is the rare class from the Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. So it's blue-black for an enchantment, like all the classes, and it starts as an enchantment that says, whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, we plan on doing that a lot, exile the top card of that player's library face down. You may look at it as long as it remains exiled. We can't do anything with it right now. We can just look at it. That's fine. 2 mana, whatever. We can pay 1 blue-black to make it level 2. Now creatures you control have menace. This works great for other potential ninjutsus, makes it harder to block our stuff. It also makes it harder to block big things that are now on the board that we want to get through, not those little unblockable things. Then if you spend another 4 mana, 2 blue-black, Rogue Class goes up to level 3. Now it says you may play cards exiled with Rogue Class, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast those spells. The usual business. This is one of those things where you're just like, I don't know, I'll just get this going. I like it for the menace. 5 mana for an enchantment that says all your creatures have menace isn't unbearable. It's not awful. We get to pay it in installments. Has to be sorcery speed as well. But now we get to look at what we have exiled, and it's face down. We get to see it. So our opponents just don't know what we have under there. Do we have an expropriate? I mean, we might. And then there's the moment where they're like, well, now that you've paid the 4, we have to deal with it. I love the idea that our opponents kind of have to spend good removal on this simple little enchantment. If I've already sunk, 9 mana into it, it's they've gotten some tempo on that. But I do think it's worth considering. And now that we're looking at doing all this combat damage for all these extra cards in our secret exile hand zone, we got to look at Double Strike. And truly, Double Strike is tough to come by in Dimir. There are no creatures with native Double Strike. The only kind time that word comes up is like those creatures like Cairn Wanderer, where it says like, oh, if a creature in any graveyard has the following abilities, they mention Double Strike in those things, but we don't have the creature to have Double Strike to go to the graveyard to begin with. Just too many hoops to jump through. So we got to do it with equipment. So obviously Fire Shrieker, 3 to cast, 2 to equip. Equipped creature has Double Strike. Grappling Hook, 4 to cast, 4 to equip. Equipped creature has Double Strike, but we also get to like choose a blocker, which we actually don't want to do in this deck. We don't want blockers. I mean, maybe if we can kill a utility creature that's really important to our opponents, but 8 mana is just too much. It looks like Double Strike might not be the way to go with this deck, but once you start thinking about it, maybe Astrionic Resonator is way better. It's 2 to cast, 2 to activate, and you copy target triggered ability you control. Trigger a Gonti ETB, trigger Thief of Sanity hitting an opponent, whatever you want. These are great things to copy, and once it's down, I'm only paying 2 per. Having to equip some equipment, I mean, there's worlds where we want to return these creatures to our hands and then we have to re-equip. It's not ideal. I just wish there was another way. I got my eye on it. I mean, this is the kind of thing where as future sets come out, as future commander decks come out, be on the lookout for a piece of equipment that grants Double Strike. They're quite rare. If they ever make one that costs 1 to equip, I can't imagine they would. That would just be too powerful. But I mean, they've made some very powerful equipment for very cheap equip costs. So who knows? If we're looking at a bunch of creatures that want to get through on combat damage, we definitely want to look at something like Key to the City. It's a 2-mana artifact that taps to discard a card and up to 1 target creature can't be blocked this turn. That's a 0-mana way to make a creature unblockable, which I love. That frees up our mana to do the ninjutsu stuff we want to do. We have to discard a card, but I'm hoping with our little Bident of Thassa's and such like that, we'll be able to make up for it. But also, when it becomes untapped, you can pay 2, and if you do, draw a card. Okay, fine. We can get it back if we want to spend mana in the future for it. I do like the design of this card very much. It's a gumball. But then you start thinking, right? Again, deck choices beget deck choices. Now that we're looking at Key to the City and we're discarding, maybe we can think about having a bit of a loot package going on, and now we get to look at madness creatures. Very cool. Things like Kitchen Imp. It's a 4-mana 2/2 flying with haste, 3 and a black. It's an imp. but it has madness for a single black. So if we can discard a card, this card, for a single black, we can get a 2/2 flying haste. That's perfect for a ninjutsu type of stuff. We can look at Big Game Hunter. It's one black to cast this 1/1 human rebel assassin regularly. When it enters the battlefield, destroy target creature with power 4 or greater. But it also has madness for a single black. Another 1/1 for a single black that has a powerful ETB ability. I really like this one. I mean, I'd love to use the key to the city to make this unblockable. Ninjutsu it back to my hand, discard through another method, and just destroy a second creature with power 4 or greater. Very nice. And now we got to look at stuff like Shadowgrange Archfiend. This is from the Crimson Vow Commander deck, so you might not be that familiar with it unless you have it or have played with it. I wasn't. It's a 7-mana demon, 6 and a black. It's 8/4, so on the surface, ninjutsuing this in off of a 1-drop for 4 mana, or maybe even 3, to just do 8 damage is significant. But there's more. When Shadowgrange Archfiend enters the battlefield, each opponent sacrifices a creature with the greatest power among creatures they control. Each opponent, you gain life equal to the greatest power among creatures sacrificed this way. And Shadowgrange Archfiend can be ninjutsued, or we can pay madness of 2 black, pay 8 life. It's a hefty life cost, but when you consider creatures will be getting sacrificed and we will be getting life equal to the greatest power, that 8 life doesn't seem too bad. I love it. So now, how do you feel about a card like Necrogoyf? 3 black for a 4. Power is equal to the number of creature cards in all graveyards. We're not really planning on stuffing our graveyard full of creatures, so I don't know that this will be huge. It depends what our opponents are doing. It's got madness for 1 black. That's what led me to this card. I was looking at madness creatures. But what did catch my eye now is that at the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player discards a card. That includes us, so we'll have to discard it. But if we're kind of madnessy, we don't really hate discarding cards as much as everyone else. And then, I mean, we got to ask ourselves, how mean do we want to be? Mean enough to do a discard angle in the deck? Do we want to throw in Dream Stealer? That's the 2 in the black menace, 1/2 human wizard. Whenever it deals combat damage to a player, that player discards that many cards. So ninjutsuing in, we're only going to get 1 card off of it. But it's got Eternalize for 6 mana total. And you exile it out of your graveyard and create a 4/4 black zombie version of it. So now that when it deals 4 damage, it'll be 4 damage. So your opponent will discard 4 cards. Great option to discard as well, because we like having things in the graveyard that can be used. So I don't hate that. But it can get uglier for sure. Scythe Spectre is a 6 mana Spectre. It's a 4 black for a 4/4 with flying. And whenever it deals combat damage to a player, each opponent discards a card. Each opponent. Each player who discarded a card with the highest mana value loses life equal to that converted mana cost, to that card's mana value. Wow. Each opponent. And that's when it deals combat damage to a player. I mean, if we can use Astronic Resonator to double that, each opponent's discarding 2, this can get pretty mean. I got one more. It's the most expensive card in the deck, but it might also be the meanest. What does that tell you about the Commander audience as a whole? 6 black for an Archon, 6/6 with flying. Whenever Archon of Cruelty enters or attacks, target opponent sacrifices a creature, a planeswalker, so a creature or a planeswalker, discards a card and loses 3 life, and you draw a card and gain 3 life. It'll enter the battlefield with ninjutsu, but we will miss the attack trigger. But, I mean, we're going to be attacking next turn unless our opponents can deal with it. This is like $11, but it's pretty mean and it's pretty good. I would consider it for sure. And then, okay, here's a card that we were just brainstorming some ideas in the old Discord there, and Runo Stromkirk, 1 blue-black, legendary vampire cleric, 1/4 with flying, already pretty decent at getting through for potential ninjutsu stuff. Not perfect, but it'll do in a pinch. And when Runo enters the battlefield, put up to one target creature from your graveyard on top of your library. On top of your library is the key, because at the beginning of your upkeep, look at the top card of your library. So if you can ninjutsu this in, I mean, there's really no way that we have to get it. It has to survive around at the table, but we're going to put something on top. And if that card is a creature card with mana value 6 or greater, you look at it in your upkeep, you may reveal it. And if you do, that's how you transform Runo Stromkirk. Now, Runo Stromkirk's on the back is Krothus, Legend of the Deep. Sorry, Krothus, Lord of the Deep. Kraken Horror. And it's Runo on the surface seems like a Kraken or Leviathan, kind of a sea monster tribal, but it never occurred to me that you don't have to have sea monsters. Transformed Runo is pretty cool. 3/5 for flying, and whenever Krothus, Lord of the Deep, attacks, create a tapped and attacking token that's a copy of another target attacking creature. Anyone? All of our ETB creatures, like, you know, that Archon of Cruelty, make another one of those. Maybe we'll make another Dream Stealer that our opponents have to deal with or discard more cards. Who cares? There's a lot of great options for that. And if that creature is a Kraken, Leviathan, or Octopus, or a Serpent, create two of those tokens instead. That's kind of overkill, but I don't know. I just read all those sea monster types and I just assumed it had to be sea monsters. I don't know that I ever, if it ever occurred to me, that it doesn't have to be. They could just copy anything. I think that's amazing. And of course, we're going to start looking through to see if there are any Krakens, Leviathans, etc. that do make sense in the deck. I think you could go a whole sea monster ninjutsu thing, which is a very funny deck, Ninjas of the Deep. But we're running Spawning Kraken, 5 and a blue. It's a Kraken. It's a 6/6. Whenever a Kraken, Leviathan, Octopus, Serpent, etc. Well, those are the four. I'm saying etc. because I'm getting tired of saying those four creature types. Whenever a sea monster you control deals combat damage to a player, create a 9/9 blue Kraken creature token. That one will also create more Krakens if it connects, etc., etc. This is a very fun card to make copies of with Runo, to ninjutsu in, however you want to do it. And Gyruda, Doom of Depths. It's a 6-mana total. Hybrid Dimir. So 4 something. It's got companion, but we can't do companion because our commander is a 3-mana commander and we can only have even mana values. So that dream has to get put on the shelf for a second. But whenever Gyruda enters the battlefield, each player mills 4 cards. Put a creature card with an even mana value from among the milled cards onto the battlefield under your control. So ninjutsuing in Gyruda for 4 mana, we'll mill a bunch and put another creature onto the battlefield. We've got a hefty amount of even-numbered beefy creatures that we're hoping to ninjutsu in. And, you know, you can always spike something great off our opponents, too. That's definitely an option with Gyruda. And if we manage to flip Runo and we're attacking, we get to make 2 copies of Gyruda. The legend rule means the 2 we make, well, only one of them gets to stick around. 2 of them will disappear immediately, but we still get those additional triggers and put additional creatures onto the battlefield. Excellent include. Now, you'll notice I haven't talked a lot about ninjas in general that have basic ninjutsu. I mentioned a few because of the other things that they do, but they just, we don't need them. And I think a lot of the ninjas, once you start looking at it, suffer from the Yuriko effect. That's just the effect that I'm naming because of since Yuriko came out, so many ninjas are like over $10. Silent Blade Oni, it's the 7-mana demon ninja 6/5, but it ninjutsus for 4-mana, sorry, for 6-mana. And whenever Silent Blade Oni deals combat damage to a player, look at that player's hand and you may cast a non-land card in it without paying for it. Obviously a super powerful ability, obviously would be very welcome in this deck, but that's a $10 card, so I think we can do without it. Higuri, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, the Still Wind, 3 blue blue for a 3/4 ninja, ninjutsus for 4-mana total, and whenever this one deals combat damage to a player, you may search your library for a ninja card, reveal it, put it into your hand, and shuffle. 2. Target ninja creature can't be blocked this turn. Excellent for getting ninjas through, helps you find more ninjas. But again, this is a $20 card. I'm not going to be, I don't want to put this in. It's not worth it. I don't need to. And then they're only getting more pricey. Ink Eyes, Servant of Oni, 6 mana for a rat ninja, 5/4, ninjutsus for 5. Whenever this deals combat damage to a player, you may put target creature card from that player's graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. And for 1 and a black, you can regenerate Ink Eyes. powerful, powerful card. I don't remember if I own one of these, if I bought one a long time ago for a deck that wanted to use it, but it's $30, $25 to $30. So like, that's too much. And I'm not even going into Sakashima Student. This is over $60, $65, 4 mana for a 0/0 human ninja, but it enters the copy of any creature, except it's a ninja in addition to its other types, and it ninjutsus for 1 and a blue. Yeah, too much money. So that's kind of the Yuriko effect. I'm not counting that, but we don't need to. I mean, it kind of paints the picture that this deck, Satoru Umezawa, is a little bit of the budget ninjutsu deck. Yuriko's the pricey ninjutsu. That's for the big boys. That's for the complicated stuff. Yuriko's a very strong deck too, so it doesn't surprise me that they're expensive, because it's a very good deck. But now we've got this deck that we don't even actually need the ninjas. It's kind of a train your own ninja deck. They all become ninjas, even though none of them started as ninjas. I like that story. I like that narrative. A bunch of underdogs who trained really hard and became a ninja team. It's kind of like Beverly Hills Ninja, I guess. Although I haven't watched that movie since it came out. And I believe it came out like a year or two, like before Chris Farley died, RIP, one of the greats. But like, is the movie good? I don't know. Do I want to name that deck after Chris Farley? Sure. I'd rather call it Tommy Boy, though, and let my opponents wonder. In any case, I'm rambling. I want to take a moment and thank some of the Discord helpers who helped out, helped me brainstorm some cards. Chiefy, Nosrak 2, Groove Chicken, Papadio, Mondo, Pips Don't Lie. Thank you very much. Couldn't do it without you. And then speaking of budget, I'm going to handle it a little bit differently this time. I'm not going to talk about lands and mana rocks because, let's face it, you're going to put whatever lands, mana rocks you want to do in your deck. Out of the cards I've talked about, except for the ones I've told you I'm not running in the deck because they're just kind of dull or way too expensive, the cards I talked about came to about $50. So if you've got some lands and some ramp and some draw, this is a $50 deck. And, you know, Archon of Cruelty, that's the one that when it ETBs or attacks, your opponent's lose a thing, discard a thing, lose some life, you draw a card, gain 3 life. It's a very powerful card. That's $12. Rexxiol, the Risen Deep. I haven't talked about him, but this is one of the best sort of Dimir combat damage creatures that there is. 3 blue-blue-black for a Kraken, 5/8. It's also a Kraken, so it also helps with Runo, although there's no ETB here, so you don't really get much off of Runo. But it has Island Walk and Swamp Walk. That's why it's so good. You're always going to find someone who can't block Rexxiol. And when Rexxiol deals combat damage to a player, there's that favorite sentence of ours. You may cast target instant or sorcery from that player's graveyard without paying the mana cost. And if that card would be put into a graveyard, exile it instead. I mean, I'm going to hit a Cultivate off that, probably a little bit of a ramp spell, maybe a removal spell. Obviously, this card is excellent, and $10 is a fair price tag for it. You decide if you want it in the deck or not. And I mentioned him before, Fallen Shinobi, kind of the ninjutsu ninja that started this whole trend of doing combat damage and exiling cards. Modern Horizons, already up to $6. Is that the Yuriko effect? I don't know. I invented it, so I'm going to say yes. So there you have it. I think this is a very cool ninjutsu deck. I think it's great. Very inspiring. I love a commander that kind of guides you with clear direction, but within that guidelines, there's so many ways to go. It's the best. It's the best kind of commander from a brewer's point of view. So Satoru Umezawa, the budget ninja deck. So let me know the kind of big creatures you put in there. Did you go madness? Would you rather go some other way? Anyway, I'd love to find out. But until then, I'll bid you adieu, and next time, we'll hit another commander from Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for being you. I'm glad you're here.